Like
I don't understand why you have to dig so deep into it.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the Mod State Podcast, 69th episode. Well, I trust everyone had a good Christmas or holiday, however you choose to celebrate. We are rolling into New Year's week and New Year's itself starting next week. So it's a new year for the Mod State Podcast, and we're happy to be here. So if you like Mod State, go to modstate.com. Check out all of our op-ed and opinion pieces, along with the links to the podcast and all the links to our social media accounts. Today, John and I get into, well, a little bit of prospective thinking about the new year and midterm elections and some foreign policy and some things that are happening on the home front. So, enough of me. Let's get to the good stuff.
You want the envelope? There. You take it. It's all yours. You kill all three of them for nothing. You greenhorn, you blockheaded jackass, you nincompoop.
Alrighty. Hey, brother, what's up?
Ron,
how goes it?
It's good to be back. I can't imagine people that do a certain thing for years and years and decades on end, the emptiness, I suppose, the term for how they feel. Just missing just a day or so around Christmas, it's like, gosh, I feel like I'm doing something wrong.
Yeah, we're jumping right into the midweek wrap, aren't we?
Well, I mean, really, I suppose it's kind of akin to, I don't know if you felt this way, you probably did to a certain degree, but when I left Bethesda after a few years, it's like this weird feeling. I mean, I remember the day I turned in the keys to that apartment in Rockville that we all called the frat house. I mean, being the last one out of there, let me tell you, that was a weird feeling.
It's the only way I can or relate to that feeling, because you're absolutely right, but I felt like that being like the last kid in school when summer break started and the school was empty and just had this air of this quietness, and I was still there, and I just had this anxiety attack. I gotta get out of here. This is weird. This is strange.
I mean, think about it. So at this rate, it will be hitting 100 sometime February-ish.
Yeah.
You know, by the time the next presidential election rolls around, I mean, you know, we'll be pushing 1,000. I mean, we'll be well over 700.
You're right. I haven't even done that math.
Well, I mean, I'm just kind of guesstimating, you know, if you will. I mean, there might be a few more. In fact, we'll probably be at 1,000 or beyond, because I'd wager in this next year, things are, given the uptick of things, you know, it's going to be more and more of a full-time thing for us. And so, I mean, who knows, by that point, yeah, we could be well beyond 1,000, you know, given our increased success on the business side of things. So, I mean, I can't imagine after, you know, 10 years of something like this and thousands of episodes, then saying, I'm going to call it a day.
Just one day. That's it. Keys in the door, turned in.
Sad, I mean, there's no way.
No, I don't think at this point.
I couldn't do it.
There's like a point of no return, right?
Well, yeah. I don't even see. Let's say, I mean, we've talked about this a number of times. How at some point I can envision someone else being managing editor, or even you. You know, but I would still, of course, want to do my column and still be involved in the multimedia side of things as well as business. I can't imagine a day coming, you know, short of my physical demise, where I'm like, yep, I'm not doing the podcast anymore.
Well,
I can't imagine that. That would just be Like, it's just the Christmas break alone. I sit there. I mean, I loved spending time with my family. Don't get me wrong. They know that. But it was definitely a, man, I'm ready to get back to it.
Yeah, it's kind of weird when you make it part of your routine. And there's a, it's not that I forget what it's like, but I get down here and I turn on the mixer, turn on the interface, get up the garage band and start EQing stuff. And it's like, oh yeah, we're going to do a podcast tonight. Sweet. And I know it's a weird feeling. Well, it's a good feeling.
By no means forget, but there's just a sort of, not just because it's part of my routine, but I mean, because to a very real degree, I believe in what we're doing. Mm-hmm. I believe in our people, mm-hmm. and I believe in the overall point of Mod State, and not just the business itself, but I mean, let's face it, the lives that we've touched. And so just this a little bit of time off, it was great going to the Saints Falcons game.
Oh yeah. It was, looked like it was fun. Really,
it was. And I took some videos. I took the beginning, the hoot at chant of the crowd, you know, after the coin toss. Oh, that was great. And, I mean, the game several points was 117 decibels, and they had it measured on the screen. It was ridiculously loud. But I kept thinking, all right, that when this time was over, you know, it didn't help, you know, on our way out of there, my brother, well, and at halftime too, but he started telling me, yeah, listen to this episode. He started telling me about all the episodes he listened to and his thoughts and how much he enjoyed it. And I didn't say anything for a while in response. He was like, what's wrong? I was like, nothing's wrong. He was like, well, what are you thinking? I said, man, you just really made me think. I can't wait to get back to this. And he said, well, that's a good thing then.
It is a good thing. It is it's not a job. Or if it is a job, it's what do they say?
It's one that we enjoy.
Exactly. If you enjoy what you're doing, you're never working. So it's
exactly. I mean, there's times where it's less fun than others, of course. I mean, when we have to go over stories that are a little darker in the mainstream than others, of course we don't relish talking about
crises. But they're important.
They are important, Ed, but in general, yes, it's one of those things, and that was his point, saying, well, that's a good thing, because it is. It's like, well, I enjoyed the day or so, the 2 days off, but I was ready to get back to this. Yeah. See, you see now why I'm like, yeah, I'm going to keep sleeping in the office.
Yep.
You know I mean it.
I know you do. That is for sure. There's no bullshit there, that's for sure.
Well, with that, Monsieur, my apologies.
Oh, no. It's first off, I would like to little shout out to everybody who tuned in over the holiday weekend. We had
a lot of people.
Yeah, we had a huge uptick. And you know, we don't normally talk about you know, our listenership or the base that we have too much, but the whole point is we appreciate the support. And for whatever reason, people we made the right call and doing something over the weekend, and just appreciate that support. And
maybe we were a lack of other options. I don't want to say better options, because it was other options, period. We were basically the only people that did anything.
Yeah.
Holidays. Yeah. But one of the reasons, and yeah, you're right, we don't, I mean, we've had a pretty steady viewership, period. It's been a steady climb, as I understand it, you know. So it's not like we've had this dearth at one point and then, you know, nothing at some point. And then, you know, it's been pretty steady. Yeah. But for whatever reason, over that time, it was sort of an explosion, and hey, we're grateful for whatever reason.
100%. So, but yeah, we've you know, the world certainly doesn't stop, and the topics to talk about certainly doesn't stop. And it's an interesting time of the year, because, and again, you know, I didn't do a podcast. This is my first kind of holiday season doing something like this, and it's hard not to begin to think about the new year and think about what is ahead of us and the predictions we can make. And mm-hmm. And I think that's sort of where we're at, especially this week, and then once the recess is over and we're back at it, and it's sort of business as usual.
And it's been 5+ months of you knowing for sure, based on when I communicate, I send you messages even long after I know you're no longer in commission for the working day. You know, obviously, well, he's always at it. He's always going to keep going.
Yeah, well, that's for sure. I'm pretty much guaranteed to have something in my Facebook Messenger or text in the morning. And it definitely is that's like the cup of coffee read, as opposed to perusing like Facebook and stuff like that. So it's
well, you got to sleep. I know that. I mean, we all have to sleep. But I get it a lot more you know, I get it a lot more in one go. I tend to hibernate for a day or so at weird times, but one of us has to have a normal schedule so that they're with it a little more, and that's you, and that's good. You know, we only need one unhinged swashbuckler at a time. So
you'll start hearing me become unhinged if I'm not getting my sleep. That, or I'll just start sounding sick. It was funny. We had a holiday dinner yesterday, and one of Sarah's cousins, he just for whatever reason can put his phone away, and he doesn't really communicate over the phone too much, and they kind of make fun of him for it. But I was thinking, I'm like, man, I've created a life for myself where I have to have my phone by me. And that's not because you're texting me or, but it's just, you're always thinking about, okay, what are we going to talk about on, or what is the focus going to be this week? And especially because we've had this buildup, especially over the last, you know, couple months, where we're really talking about, policy geared, not necessarily just the policy, but how it affects American people and how it affects the world in general, and where we sort of believe we should be going solution-based. The means to the solution. And it's really hard for me to read into the things that are happening without having that context. And so, you know, it feels good for me to be able to put it out here on the airways and get people engaged. And, you know, the days you do miss the podcast, you're like, oh man, it's not that you're competing against mainstream media, but you're hearing the stories that are being reported on. And by us staying on top of our game, it's almost like we're bringing it a little bit before, or having some sort of illumination on the topic right as it's happening. And that's is the most exciting part of it and the most important. So anyway, we are here. Our audio is here. Yeah, I don't know what it is, man. It is so cold here in Denver, and there's like no clouds in the sky. And I don't know if that is just screwing with telecommunications, or they're already throttling our internet.
Oh, no, of course not. The thing is, I know we're obviously not a news publication. We're more along the lines of current events. And where I split those hairs is, obviously, we follow the greater trends of what's going on. And part of it is, yeah, we do get have our own sources. We do get certain things. But the greater point of us being in current events is that we follow the overall trends. And our whole point is to kind of sit back and be able to recognize those trends and say to people, hey, this is what's been coming down the pike. And what's really interesting is I know we've agreed that it's happened at least 9 times, but I think it's probably in the double digits by now of times where we've hit on something and said, now watch, this is going to be a trend you're going to start hearing more about. And the eerie times where it's been literally the next day.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's kind of our role, is why we miss it, is that, hey, we're not doing that. You know, it's not that people can't think without us. Of course they can. But we've actually had people give us feedback and say, hey, we miss having all this perspective on this. Because whether you agree with us or not, or one of us or both of us or not, is irrelevant. The fact is, we do definitely have a unique viewpoint on this. We have a unique aim for this.
Right? Yeah, I agree. and that's what I think that's what's... when we do have those moments. I remember when it first started happening, I was texting you vigorously, like, "You, dude, we just talked about this, and it's all out there." But, you know, I think hopefully more of that to come in 2018. And there's definitely some things that we pre-showed about that warrant some attention. And as we all know, going into recess, they did pass the tax bill, and it was signed by Donald Trump. And we'll begin to see those effects, not immediately, but, you know, we did see some things happened, and that was companies claiming that they would be giving bonuses to workers, and in some way that maybe was a nod to the tax bill. And hopefully we can see that coming. And obviously the one thing that you and I agree with and hope for the most is that the stagnant standard of living that really, I mean, you can look back and see since the recession in 2008, 2007, 2009, horrible ordering there, but you know, you did see the return from the stock market. You saw the wages at in Wall Street and finance sort of get back to their normal levels. But what you didn't see was the standard of living increase.
Right, yeah. Wages have not kept up with inflation.
Exactly.
And, you know, that standard of living, the cost of goods. One thing you will see, just to break it down into a everyday parlance, is Mod State, which is a wholly owned property of Divinity Well On, which has a number of financial stakeholders in it. Our determination has long been to provide total medical and dental coverage for our employees as we grow, right?
Mm-hmm.
And we can, it almost goes without saying, but we're going to go ahead and say it anyway here. From that perspective, the bill is a good thing for us, as opposed to having to pay 35% of our corporate income in taxes, which is the highest corporate income tax rate in the world. It's been a cut to 21%. And as for us personally, you know, we're not about stuffing our own pockets. Obviously, we do want to make a profit because that's what's going to help keep us in the game long term. But I can tell you, obviously, that's a significant break for startups such as ourselves, mm-hmm. that are not pass-through corporations. We're a C corporation. We have to report to ourselves, stakeholders, quarterly, but we also have to report to the state, Louisiana quarterly, and the United States government quarterly. Well, it's easy to see where such a significant break, you know, a significant amount of tax relief, our intention is clearly that only accelerates the rate at which we're going to be able to, yes, hire the first handful of full-time people, and it's going to help us in the bottom line with being able to provide medical and dental, and it, you know, without it crushing us financially internally. Mm-hmm. So it's a good thing for us on the level of, yeah, we're entrepreneurs, but we also not only want to hire people, but we want to them to have good lives,
yeah,
as well. We're not looking to simply scrimp what we can.
Yeah,
we want to provide those things for our employees.
It's a win to be able to do the right thing and the most responsible thing for those who you do hire. And in that case, you know, that would be a mission that we would take on regardless. And in a way,
well, it's just going to be easier now for
exactly.
us to do that. Because we had talked about before, we're going to do it regardless, but we would be cutting it close, obviously, and providing full medical and dental to people and their families, you know, as well as we want to pay them competitively. We were talking about, well, we don't want to sacrifice the medical or dental insurance. We looked at Prudential, you know, MetLife and all that, but it might kind of hurt their salaries a little bit. So, but we're still committed to that, you know, the benefits side of it. Well, now it's going to relieve some of that pressure, and it's going to make it mm-hmm. a little easier for us to not only provide the benefits, but a competitive salary. So, I mean, for us, and hopefully other startups are going to think like us in terms of taking care of their employees, for our prospective employees, our future, it's a good thing.
Yeah, absolutely. And hopefully that reverberates throughout the nation with this. And, you know, we've talked about this at nauseam, what we would like to see. And I think, like we predicted before, you'll see the things that you don't necessarily like, or the I told you so's before you do see benefit. So, again, moving kind of forward with that.
It's going to impact us quicker than a lot of people are going to see it in the news.
Yeah, I agree.
We'll tell
with
you
that.
How it benefits us, we promise.
Yeah.
We're going to tell you, obviously, the guts of everything going on here internally. It's as a need-to-know basis. But we will be able to report, and hey, you know, we were able to, I mean, you're going to see it on the site itself. You're going to see mm-hmm. it in the multimedia product as more people get involved on a full-time basis. Well, that's what we're talking about here.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, we talked in pre-show a little bit about 2018 and just here with lawmakers and coming up with the midterm elections. And I know we keep talking about the midterm elections, but it really does start when they come back and when the lawmakers come back. I mean, it has already started, but
well, they have to run for election every 2 years.
Exactly.
Representatives.
So we were talking, what do we see happening before the campaigning really takes full swing, and you see a lot of back and forth from the constituencies back to DC to do to vote, and you know we looked at these two major topics, and one of them being immigration, and the other being infrastructure, and because it is an election year, and because even though the tax bill did get passed, and I think that was monumental for the GOP, I think it bodes well for them to have another solid win, I guess. And I realize that sounds like teams and sort of tribal.
Heading into the elections, that's
what it is. It is. It is what it is. And, you know, we made, obviously, I think what we'll see as well is some federal spending cuts, some budgetary issues that come up, and that will be, it will become testy, if you will, when, especially with the tax bill, and I think this will be a good argument or debate point for those who are not in favor of the tax bill in context of increasing the deficit by $1 trillion.
Yeah, it's so funny to me now to hear, not that I'm not concerned about it. Obviously, I've stated my concerns a number of times about balancing the budget and reducing the national debt, but it's funny to me to hear, not you specifically, but many on the left who couldn't possibly have cared less about the doubling of the national debt. And that's not a rumor. That's a fact.
It's a fact.
What happened under the Democratic Congress and President Obama. Now, all of a sudden, they care about it.
It's funny, but you know why, though. And
yeah, they don't give a damn about it. It's politics.
It really is a bit of... Well, I mean, again, you're going to jump on whatever you can. And in this case, it does.
Politics is all it is. They don't give a damn about the national debt.
They don't. And we'll just say Democrats don't care about the national debt. But where they smell hypocrisy, they will go on the attack. And in this case, it is a...
Not their own, I'm assuming you're talking about.
No. You know, in the case where we're okay and you can make the argument that, hey, this was...
The GOP railed about it when the Democrats were in power.
Yeah, and now you create a bill where there is a... whether you like it or not, I mean...
I don't agree with the $1.5 trillion figure. I believe it'll be less than that, but the idea that there's going to be enough growth for it to be revenue neutral is absurd. I don't see it creating a $1.5 trillion deficit or increase in the deficit. And subsequently the national debt, but I do believe there will be an increase in the deficit. Will it be to that degree? No. But supply siders are dreaming if they think that it's going to cover that in the next 10 years.
Yeah.
It's not.
I mean, again,
I see it being less than a trillion, but it will be there.
It is a theory. It's an economic theory. I mean, all of this is, by definition, a theory when you put it into law, and it doesn't become a theory once, you know, there's a... an outcome.
Right. I think that it will spur X amount of growth. I do believe that there will be a reinvestment in wages. There will be hiring, whatnot. But I don't think it'll be to the tune of covering $1.5 trillion potential deficit increases. I do think there will be, you know, at least half a trillion. I figure it's going to be between $700 and $800 billion of increase in the debt and the debt. Still a chunk of change. I do see that it's going to cover some of those losses, but they're going to have to find the savings somewhere else. And that's kind of what leads into what you were referring to.
Yeah.
The infrastructure bill is, it's going to be a pan-partisan thing. It's got a lot of support on the other side of the aisle. It's got a lot of support across the country, but by no means is that going to be revenue neutral.
Oh, 100% not. I mean, when you're looking at infrastructure development and repair, that bill just adds up very quickly. I mean, anyone that's remodeled a house knows that even the lowest bidder is going to be an expensive project. And I guess that's where the fight begins. And when you come back, if Paul Ryan comes back and he does want to attack the budget and federal spending, and that's in Medicare, Medicaid, and Social Security, I think you and I both agree that there's an insane amount of money going into Social Security and Medicare, Medicaid. I mean, I work in a place where the majority of people are their expensive healthcare 3 times a week is provided by Medicare and Medicaid. I don't really know any other way that they would be able to pay for this, and that's where I get torn.
There's a number of ways that they could. It's possible for them to pay for this, but what is likely, and that's where there's a catch-22 here for Paul Ryan and company, is they know that such a discussion is going to make their reelection bids collectively more difficult But at the same time, they're wondering, are we going to get another chance to do this mm-hmm. while Donald Trump is president?
Yeah, and while they have the control that they do.
That's what I mean.
Yeah.
Are they going to get another chance to do this? They don't know that they're going to have the majority in both houses, okay? And will they have the majority again? Let's say they get it next go-round. Well, next go-round means that's assuming that President Trump wins re-election.
Mm-hmm.
So there's kind of a feeling of this may be their best shot to get some things done. Now, my opinion would be they get some things like the infrastructure bill done right, and they cut expenditures while leaving the social safety net alone, then that would guarantee the return to D.C.
Mm-hmm.
I do think they could do it, okay, without cutting the social safety net.
Yeah, and that will be the difficult part. And I really do. I mean, if you think that the healthcare debate was vitriolic and was intense, federal spending for those social safety nets is going to be, I mean, it's basically Obamacare and healthcare on steroids.
The president tweeted something interesting over the holiday break that I don't know how many people caught, but he said, you know, he referenced $1+ trillion, and it is definitely $1+ trillion, Mr. President, being spent on wars that do not have popular support. Now, he worded it differently than that, but he's referring to the fact all these foreign wars that nobody seems to want, and the money that in his view was wasted there, well, that's a starting point to me,
mm-hmm.
is removing our troops from zones people don't want them in, cutting the DOD budget and saying, no, you're going to continue to invest your money in your people. We're just not going to have ad infinitum weapons programs that we don't need. You know, so there are ways for them to address the budgetary crisis without cutting the social safety net.
Mm-hmm.
Now, whether they have the courage to follow the president's lead there or not,
that remains to be seen, really. And we'll see. Again, I think that the overall debate, just from what you'll see in the mainstream media, will be, I think there'll be quite an attack on the GOP in terms of cutting social safety nets. And, I mean, obviously the biggest ones to go after are the Social Security and the healthcare costs. Also, this individual mandate that's been somewhat repealed through the tax bill. I know President Trump is touting this as the repeal of Obamacare. But, you know, we'll have to be careful with what that does overall. We'll just watch that closely, what that will do to the market itself and the maybe unintended consequences there. But I see his point by doing that, if it can bring Democrats and Republicans back to the table to craft something. And maybe it does. I don't know if it gets done in 2018, but I think it's something he would like to see done sometime in his presidency. But I think that relies.
One thing to remember, though, is that whether the Republicans remain in power or not, we've been looking at since, I mean, I remember when I was going to community college in 2003 and 2004, the discussion was that the Social Security Trust, you know, the program itself, was going to be bankrupt by 2025. Well, they clearly, through some cash infusions and treasury bond sales, they've manipulated that figure, and now we're looking at potentially 2029.
Mm-hmm.
That's still not a long time away.
It's really
easy to sit here and say, well, the mean old GOP is one to attack. And I know you're not saying that, but you're going to hear it, as you said, from the mainstream media. Well, the main old GOP is wanting to attack these programs and going, okay, did IQs just drop sharply? The largest generation in American history, the baby boomers, are retiring, okay? The Social Security Trust Fund is going to be fiscally insolvent
mm-hmm.
by the end of next decade. Something has got to be done.
Yeah, I mean, that's just, it's historical trends. I mean, even going through nursing school, you look at the pie charts of demographics and ages in this country, and like by 2020, it will be the oldest population in, well, the biggest, oldest population, if you will, that the United States has ever seen. And you're really kind of venturing into uncharted waters, and to not address these issues, I think, is somewhat destructive, and to not really think and punt the ball down the road, I think could lead to some serious consequences. So it is something that needs to be to be looked at. And again, in the situation that we're in now with wages that just can't, that are not competing with the standard of living and with housing, I mean, this is something that many people will have to heavily rely on. And, you know, again, it's to be played out. And I think that's where you'll see in the mainstream media this huge attack on the nasty, mean Republicans who are really, you know, by principle trying to balance the budget and to have
less
federal spending.
It's going to have to be addressed regardless.
It will.
Let's say the Democrats win both houses and whoever their candidate is wins in 2020. Cool. Guess what? Come spring 2021, the bad news is still going to be there. Mm-hmm. It's still going to have to be addressed. And that, to me, doesn't necessarily mean cuts, but it does mean reform is going to happen because there's no money tree out there. There's only so many times. I mean, the Federal Reserve has made it clear their bond buyback program is over. They're selling all, they're winding down their balance sheet, okay? There's no future rescue coming from the Federal Reserve there. For one thing, it was unsustainable, and they knew that, hence the wind down. Mm-hmm. So at some point in the 2020s, this issue is going to have to be addressed. We've been punting the ball, as you put it, forever. Well, I know cuts don't win many elections, but somebody's going to have to do it. It doesn't matter what is in parentheses next to their name.
Yeah, it makes more sense to begin to address this issue now. And I think we do it well. I mean, I'm guilty of procrastination. But when it comes to something as monumental as this, I don't know that this is an issue that we would like to be standing in front of at the last minute trying to make changes, because I think that's more destructive than, you know, addressing it now and actually having some realistic conversation about it. And again, it's an issue that's far more complex than just black and white. And it just makes more sense to me to begin the discussion and begin to find some bipartisan ground here. And, you know, make it less about these teams and these tribes and take it head on. But, you know, we'll see. You talked about immigration and infrastructure.
I think immigration is going to be a loser for both parties. I don't, as far as this next year, I don't, unless they've got some miraculous. But I mean, to me, I'm not really sure what was it, the Gang of Eight. This Marco Rubio was one of them. He co-authored this immigration reform package, then mysteriously abandoned it the last second. But unless they decide to come together and actually do something, I don't know, for the good of the people as a whole.
How dare you ask that?
Right. I think it's a loser politically for the GOP to enact any sort of real reform. And at the same time, I think it's a loser for the Democrats in a sense that their answer of maintaining the status quo and allowing these illegal sanctuary cities to continue functioning is not popular in the heartland. So I don't think there's an easy win either way here. I don't know that immigration, well, I would say it shouldn't come up as far as what's politically potable, but will it come up is another question. I don't know. I keep hearing it, but I'm not seeing it.
Yeah, I think if anything, based on immigration, I think DACA will be something that comes up again. But, you know, like infrastructure, I think that's has some fair bipartisan support, and Democrats could use that as leverage in something like budget cuts or an infrastructure bill, spending bill. So we'll see. I think that's potable, if you will. And I think it's a win-win. I think most Americans, when you look at the facts of a program like DACA, there isn't a whole lot to actually be negative about, unless you're a real hardline nationalist or just have very far right views on immigration. But I think that's something that they may be able to come together on, and maybe that's as far as they get with immigration. But I think
what the president did, I mean, this is one of many times he said this, but he has vowed to, starting in January, start working with Democratic leadership to address this. He's long maintained it's something he wants to see happen, which is why he, you know, delivered the infamous "you have 90 days" deadline. And there is support from men like Senator Rubio and Senator Flake, who won't be there after November, unless he changes his mind, which he could. Marco Rubio, after all, is still in the Senate, after saying he wasn't going to run. So there is some bipartisan support for that. I think DACA, yes, that's a potential win. But as far as a massive, as sweeping immigration overall bill, I think it's a non-starter. I think it's a loser issue for an election year.
Speaking of Flake, this is completely a side topic, but there is some rumblings that he may possibly have a presidential bid in 2020. So just, you heard that here. So maybe keep that in the back.
Is he a Republican?
Yeah. Well, I didn't get that far.
Try and knock the nomination out of Trump's hands.
That's a potential. It's just it's a little thing thing I read. Thing a little birdie told me. But anyway,
you had your own little sources, huh?
Well, no. Just a thing.
Well, all right then.
Yeah.
You heard it here.
But anyway, switching gears. Obviously, that's what's we're looking at. I think in 2018, and just to keep your ears open. Of course, anything could change, but there. Did want to shift gears a little bit to the Middle East, and we haven't talked about foreign policy or geopolitics in a bit on this podcast, but there was a story that emerged out of Saudi Arabia, and I just thought it was interesting to talk about geopolitics and some of these things that we miss that may not be as important to the average individual, and quite frankly, really aren't that important to the everyday working of the American people. But it's a really good example of how there's these chess moves that are being played all over the world. And this particular situation was very obvious and had the international community sort of scratching their head. But I figured we'd take a moment to at least talk about it and just in the context of geopolitics. And that was within the last, this season rather, this winter, and just recently, like within the last month, the prime minister from Lebanon actually went to Saudi Arabia and just mysteriously and in just not in normal fashion actually gave his resignation speech in Saudi Arabia. And it had the international community a bit puzzled.
Just a fluster.
And he eventually, so there was this surmising, these assumptions, which are true now, that he was actually kidnapped by the Saudi Arabian government. And kidnapped is a,
They're true now.
They're true now. And
so
I think when I heard.
The Saudis have admitted to kidnapping him?
So I don't know if they specifically. Came out and said they kidnapped him. And when I say kidnapping, this is a very loose term for kidnapping.
These are our allies you're talking about.
Exactly.
Here.
So when I first heard kidnapping, I had this idea of hood over your head, thrown in an unmarked car with some goons stuffed in the trunk, and then, you know, trunk opens, sunlight in your face, microphone in your face, like, dude, you're going to give your resignation or we're going to kill you. Didn't really go down like that. Now that it has all come out, really what happened was he went to Saudi Arabia under the guise that he was going to meet diplomatically there, and they kind of strong-armed him to give his resignation. So he did get to leave Saudi Arabia, came back to Lebanon, and rescinded his resignation, if you could do such a thing. He did. And it came out later that they did strong-arm him, and I think it left a lot of people who didn't understand the complexities of the Middle East wondering what the hell happened.
Well, so Lebanon has long been, mm-hmm. I mean, it was a country that in the 70s was just ruined by the Soviets, but they've long been an arm, an extension of Iran's Shia politics mm-hmm. in the Middle East. They're rivals, obviously, of the Sunni allied Saudis
exactly.
and Egyptians.
So the prime minister does align or is a supporter of Iranian-backed Hezbollah in that region. And so this is where it gets, the geopolitics to me are very interesting. It might bore some people.
Recently inexplicably had hidden support from President Obama. I was like, what were you thinking?
Yeah. It, so
Hezbollah has long been condemned as an anti-Israel terrorist group, mm-hmm. but not just because they're anti-Israel, but because of the senseless taking of innocent life. Mm-hmm. But anyway, continue.
Yeah, well, that's yes. So we've talked about this before, and I cannot tell you what episode it is, not because I'm keeping it a secret, but I just actually don't know off the top of my head. But we did. No, we're not there yet. And we talked about Iraq and Iran being these two major buffer states that the United States actually pitted against one another to create unrest in that region. And the whole goal of the United States, for the interest of the region and the United States, was to keep that area in a bit of chaos. And what we did effectively in the Iraq War was overthrow Hussein and create the ability for a nation like Iran to have more power than they normally do. And there really
wasn't the goal, and what we've done since is elevate Saudi Arabia, who's a Sunni state, and to fill that vacuum. And they have filled it, like with the leadership in the rebellion in Yemen. I mean, Saudi Arabia has filled that void.
They have, with the support of the United States. And they are a bit emboldened now because they do have support from Donald Trump. And they're going through a bit of a change right now with their new Prince Salman, who is trying to move the country forward progressively. I think
they're investing new money in non-fossil fuel spending. Mm-hmm. They have announced investing massive cash reserves in diversifying the country's economy and in allowing for more civil liberties.
Exactly.
And hence the support from the French.
Yes. And when we mean civil liberties, they're not there yet.
But drive now.
They're getting there. But what this has created...
That's true. Women can drive.
They can now. They can now. Now I'm going to go. In Saudi Arabia. And so you now have these two major powers, Iran and Saudi Arabia. And it just so happens that they are the... Though the faith is the same, the faction of the belief is juxtaposed. And that creates a bit of tension and some regional...
Think Protestantism versus Catholicism, like in the Middle Ages, the wars that were fought.
Or recently in Ireland.
Mainstream Europe, it was in the Middle Ages. But along those lines, if you need a construct to rationalize this in Western terms, well, think
that. Exactly. Right. So now you have these two regional powers that are fighting for control of this region. And so it was in Saudi Arabia's interest to destabilize Lebanon and the power that Iran and the influence Iran had in Lebanon by creating or strong-arming the prime minister to resign. Now, this was very obvious. This was maybe rather clumsily done, and I'm not entirely sure what they thought would actually happen, but it has put Saudi Arabia in a bit of hot water in the international community. Not that much, because you've got, the United States still backing Saudi Arabia. But anyway, I guess moving on from Saudi Arabia and the Middle East, I just think the complexity of the geopolitics in that region, I think it just, because it was so obvious, we can see it, and I thought, it was worth to at least touch on and just show what actually goes on. But anyway, I think there is one more major issue that I have a bit of hope for, or a bit of optimism for, and that's a word that you don't hear me say too much on this podcast recently, but that is the January 1st, California will enact recreational marijuana. And being from a state in Colorado that I'm getting used to this recreational marijuana scene, we haven't seen, when I say we, like I've lived in Colorado for so long, so I'm so used to the trend of legal weed, but California now, I think we talked about it in pre-show, we said I believe it's still in the top 10 for biggest economies in the world. Is that right, I think?
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, it used to be the sixth largest. I think it's slipped a little bit, but it's still in the top 10. And so it obviously it's a state to watch in terms of what goes down. I mean, how it impacts the course of the country. I mean, I do think, of course, there's a reluctance elsewhere to follow California, given that they've kind of run their own sixth largest, what was the sixth largest economy under the ground in a lot of ways, but that's another topic for another time. But it definitely is, it's going to be impactful, as we see that there is a sort of sense amongst men like Paul Ryan, for instance, in the GOP, that this is a civil rights issue that's a winner potentially for the GOP, and it's kind of interesting to hear them embrace it in some ways. And then you've got purple states like Louisiana. I mean, yeah, it was red in a lot of the elections, but they're also not afraid to elect a black Democrat either.
Yeah.
So it's, you know, it's a very purple state, and New Orleans is a very purple area, obviously. And you see that state, the state, Louisiana, embracing a medical program, and there's increasing support for recreation on it. You know, Louisiana and Florida are the first two in the South to have a medical program, and I wouldn't be surprised to see both of those states become the first two states in the South to have recreational in the next the next decade. I really wouldn't be surprised.
Well, I mean, you think about a place like New Orleans, who could lead the way in more open use of marijuana, like a coffee shop, I mean, or something like that.
It's decriminalized now. I mean, my parents and I were, you know, my parents, my brother and I were walking along, you know, to and from the Saints game, and it was, there were not that many people, but there were a few people with joints and blunts that were out in public, and there was no to-do about it. There was no sort of outrageous behavior going on. I mean, it was you know, new for them to see, not new for me, but, you know, at the same time, they saw it, and there was no, oh, well, this is bad, something bad's going to happen. It just was, and New Orleans went about its day.
Yeah, exactly. I think it'll be, it's interesting to hear that from someone like Paul Ryan, who, you know, if he really were to back that, I think that that could be a huge platform that the GOP could really win on. I mean, there definitely is a base there that would be categorically opposed to it. But I think
But they're not going to abandon them, you know, men and women that are pro-life and that are in full accordance with supporting the troops in every, I know Democrats are as well, but going the extra mile, if you will, is how they see it, and programs for the troops and medical care is something the GOP has long embraced. Mm-hmm. Well, as long as you have those tenets of quote-unquote conservatism there, I really don't see their base abandoning them over a support for the regulation and taxation of marijuana. I don't see that, them abandoning them over that. And it's the truth. And I think as long as there are men and women like Paul Ryan who say, hey, this is a potential winning issue, socially speaking, for the GOP, I think they're right. And I think this is an opportunity for them.
I do. And I think with California, I think if this was any other state, I may not talk about it just because it's just another state, but I wonder what kind of domino effect a place like California could have to the greater...
It won't be having a domino effect on red areas, obviously. Yeah. This was a certain, well, whatever way California is going, we want to go the opposite way of it, and for a variety of reasons. Some of them right, some of them not. But I certainly think the South is going to pay a lot more attention to Florida, and specifically, I mean, Florida just legalized medical, but the city of New Orleans has decriminalized it, period. So I think there's going to be a lot more attention paid to the city of New Orleans as it goes into its tricentennial year. There's going to be a lot of attention on it globally, but especially in the South. I think it's going to be a good example to say, hey, New Orleans is no more of an out-of-control hellhole than it was before.
In fact, Patreon has gone up. There is increased revenue to the restaurant scene there, and everyone's happy. There's less violence.
Less violent crime. I mean, hey, I'd rather tourists come in town and consume that than copious amounts of alcohol.
You know what? I think Bourbon Street would actually be much safer, to be honest with you.
Well, honestly, I think it is. I mean, from being, I didn't go down Bourbon Street, but from going down in that area, there was a much more, not that the area has ever been bad. I mean, I've never seen any sorts of things going on there, but, and I've been there in some crazy times of day and night, whichever way you want to look at it, but it seemed like there was no real to do about it. I mean, we saw it, but we also saw policemen going about their day, and honestly, it was good from people in my family, other than me, to see it, to see it in action. I think New Orleans would be a good example to the rest of the South, again, heading into the tricentennial, and God knows we're going to be there, and heading into April, so Yeah. We can see and to report back on. So there's time yet to elaborate on this, but I do think it's a potentially winning issue for the GOP, and perhaps seeing it in a purple area like South Louisiana would be good.
Yeah. Well, we are Colorado. It seems to be experiencing a darkness, a net darkness, if you will. The internet seems to be shoddy here in the front range.
Storms.
Yeah, I guess it's a weird time, but I think we're going to wrap up a little bit early so we don't have...
New Orleans came through winter storms with no issues, but Denver...
But Denver, the home of the mountains and everything else, and we can't seem to get our internet under control, but, you know, we'll be
New
back...
New Orleans snowed and everybody's like, yeah, whatever.
And we still did podcasts. But anyway, we'll be back this week, and then, of course, for the weekend beat... Again, we really appreciate your support tuning in. If you want more, go to modstate.com. Follow us on our social media pages and reach out to us.
Let us know what you think of the new design of the Podomatic page. And we've kind of done a little streamlining of that and the social media site. So yeah, please give us some feedback, even if it's bad, constructive criticism. We need it. You know, you've been a very honest viewership thus far, and please continue to be. Don't worry about hurting our feelings. We want to make this better. So the only way you're going to hurt our feelings is not telling us anything.
Exactly. So speak up. Well, my friend.
Au revoir.
We'll see you.